Radio, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. And once again, I am Martin, joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, this guy's music, I love it. Why don't you tell everybody who it is?
Well, we have ourselves a singer-songwriter, and he's performed some great music. He's got a new covers album called Substitute Preacher 2 out. He is B. Beeman. B, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing? You guys in Calgary, is that right?
That's correct.
Cool.
Yeah, Calgary. You're actually the second person in a row that we interviewed somebody yesterday from St. Louis, second person in a row from St. Louis.
Oh, nice. So
what can you tell us about the city? How does it kind of affect your music? What did it
I haven't lived there for a while, but I was born and raised there till I was about 18. So it definitely has a big imprint on me. Musically, it's a cool place, and what mixture of cultures. That's like on the Mississippi River. Historically, there's like slave trade from New Orleans coming up, and so there's a lot of French, Spanish, English influence just culturally. But in terms of music, there's obviously Chuck Berry and Ike and Tina Turner, and more recently, like some major, one of the most major hip-hop producers is Metro Boomin. He's out of St. Louis. Not that I have very much in common with him, but St. Louis has a really cool musical history. Chicago, in my opinion, takes up a lot of the air in the blues scene, but St. Louis has a lot of good blues too.
Nice. You got 7 years in between the last covers album that you did here, and why is it that this is the right time that you found to put this one out?
I think it was partly pandemic stir crazy a little bit, but I had two original albums, full-length albums, come out in between, and this was always kind of meant as a little bit more lighthearted side project, I guess you could say, but yeah, I mean, I'm also pretty hard on myself as to what I think is any good. So I have a huge folder of cover songs that will never see the light of day, from Elton John to, you know, I don't even know what. But so I just called the best of the best, and it kind of came out that way. And I definitely had some superb help from producer friend of mine, Sam Kassir. He's worked on two of my previous albums, and he, you know, put a nice little bow on it and took it to another level as well. But it's the album is a kind of an experiment, as well as the first iteration of Substitute Preacher. The main goal is for me was trying to kind of write songs that everybody knows, like rock and roll arena, and kind of write them as more as they were blues songs that were covered by those artists. So kind of to go back in time and see if I can work it. So for this album on Back in Black, which a lot of people know, the AC/DC heavy rock song, I kind of made it into a Everly Brothers / Johnny Cash style thing. Not rockabilly. I don't like that word rockabilly, but I kind of lean towards that word. Cause it's not Brian Setzer. That's for damn sure. But it's more, you know, old Johnny Cash, Everly Brothers style.
So do you go into one of these songs with an idea of exactly what you want the arrangement to be then? Or do you kind of start fooling around with one of these cover songs and organically discover what you can do with it?
I think it's more organic. Probably more rare is where I'm like, oh, let's do this clever juxtaposition thing. But that doesn't usually happen. It kind of comes out of almost meditation on the song, I guess you could say, just sitting there with it for quite a long time and playing the chords and or alternating the chords, messing with the melody, maybe seeing what I could do. But it kind of comes out of just sitting there and being patient, honestly.
Well, I mean, I enjoy your music in general. I love Substitute Preacher too, as I did in the first one. I think I really enjoyed My Best Friend's Girl, but I think your best one is the last is the, you know, when you're doing Frank Sinatra, you're just nailing the core of the song's emotion.
He's a hero. I mean, a hero. I say that word lightly, but I mean, he's a musical hero for sure. He was an amazing performer, and even like trumpeters and horn players would listen to him for his phrasing and stuff like that. I'm sure maybe you've heard that, but he had a way of squeezing the life out of every song, kind of, with the way he would perform it. And I love that. And I learned a lot from that. An old friend of mine, who I passed through Calgary with, was Chris Cornell. And he didn't tell me this, but I read about, for Black Hole Sun, when he recorded that, the producer had him listen to a bunch of Sinatra and like listen to My Way before he recorded Black Hole Sun, which makes some sense. But he has a really broad appeal in a way, like Jim Morrison, like Sinatra. And, you know, I guess if you're, he has the most famous version of it, but he didn't write it or anything. I kind of forget who wrote it. I think Paul Anka maybe wrote the lyrics, but it's an old French song, I think, that Paul Anka grabbed and changed into his own version.
Well, that's right. I remember hearing that before. Paul Anka did that with My Life, but
And the funny thing too is that Frank Sinatra didn't like the song. He didn't want to do it.
You're kidding.
because it was too boastful for him.
That doesn't make sense. He seems like a boastful guy. Or maybe I'm just thinking of Joe Piscopo.
it's just from what I remember reading is that it wasn't his favorite song to perform, but it was such a huge song for him, he had to.
Well, it's also like that song is really, I've read some article or something about how in the Philippines people love karaoke, and one of the top karaoke songs in popularity is My Way, and people get into like fights at karaoke if you don't do a good version of it, if you butcher it.
Wow.
People get like shot sometimes, and it's like it's a brutal thing going on over there with My Way. Obviously I don't know firsthand, so this all just sounds sensational, but but yeah, it's like a bit of a burden to take on, you know. It's not like an easy song. You gotta go for it. And and so that was a one take actually of it. Nice. I probably did like two or three takes of it, but that was a one take of it. And one takes are on guitar and vocals. Like nowadays in 2021, everybody's fine tuning every little syllable of every song, every lyric. And if it's not pitch perfect and timed perfect, it sounds off to a lot of listeners. So to do something like that where I can't actually change anything because the vocals are baked into the guitar mic and vice versa. So you can't tune it. You can't time, you know, nudge it over a bit to make it like, sit right. So it is what it is, warts and all. And so mixing it, I was like, I cringed at a couple of things, but Sam Kassir, the producer, was like, it's not bothering me. I think it sounds great. So
yeah, I agree with him. I think it sounded absolutely great. Like I said, I think the emotional core of the song it really stands out. So, you know, it intrigues me that you have all these other covers that you weren't willing or you didn't want to put on there. Because, I mean, it's a six song EP, but it sounds like you easily could have done a full length album.
It's an exciting project, honestly, for me, because I'm really flipping the songs on their head to make them really my own, trying to make them my own. So it's a creative process, and it's kind of fun. It's a lot more lighthearted than trying to write your own songs and worry about your image, about this and that and stuff like that. And so I was really excited about working on it the end of last year. And I have basically plans for a third one, but I mean, it's going to be a while. I'll probably do an originals album in between, but, yeah, there's a lot more.
Excellent.
Do you ever find when you're, you know, like how long, I guess, does it take you to kind of get the original out of your head, like the original, you know, melody line and all that stuff and the original version, just so that you can kind of perform yours without winding up breaking into the original?
I think all the songs that I've done on these are real. I've known since I was like 14 years old. I knew how to play them by the time I was like 14 or whatever, 15, like verbatim type of thing, like Best Friend's Girl. I knew how to chug along on those guitar chords and stuff like that because I loved rock and roll music. So I know that stuff so well that it's almost boring to me now. Not boring, so not the right word, but it's enjoyable to flip it around, flip it on its head and try a different style. I guess that's the first step I take is, can I do a different style of music with this song? And for Back in Black, I know AC/DC loves older music. They love blues music and stuff like that. I'm a huge AC/DC fan, so I know that little bit about them. So I kind of probably thought about that a little bit when doing Back in Black. And Paranoid, I don't have a really good explanation for. because there's no Ozzy Osbourne Black Sabbath line to be drawn, but it's kind of like a creepy murder ballad, I guess you could say. My inspiration is this artist Odetta. She's a famous old folk blues artist, a black woman, and she sang a Woody Guthrie song called "Pastures of Plenty," and it's a really haunting, really cool cover of that song. So that was kind of an inspiration for Paranoid. But yeah, each song is different, definitely.
I do find it fascinating because I know that there's so many covers albums out there and that kind of thing. And I always find it interesting to see what people try to attain when they're doing a covers album, because there's so many people that just go out there and it's just like, this is our take on this. And it sounds like the same song only with a different singer. But you know, I like the fact that you've gone out there and tried to reinterpret the songs. And I really like it when other artists do that as well.
Yeah. All Along the Watchtower is like an inspiration for sure. Like every time I do it, Jimi Hendrix's version, he just made it his, right? Like Nobody cares about Dylan's version anymore. So that's kind of an inspiration. Every time I do one of these. I've done a lot of gigs with a band in my life, and when I was living in San Francisco area, I used to do these awful shows after baseball games at this bar across the street from where the Giants played. There's all these drunk assholes come in and want covers. And I knew how to play all these covers, and it was like awful. So you would want to mix it up it just has this wedding band sort of feel, which no offense to anybody who's in a wedding band. I know the grind, but I don't like playing covers of like verbatim, like this guitar does this, you know? And then even when you hear like covers of songs on the radio, it's just like there's a distorted guitar instead of a clean guitar. And then a new singer, like you said, it's not different. And I guess a big moment for me was I did this Prince tribute in New York at Carnegie Hall. Really lucky to get on this bill with like 1,000 amazing artists. There's D'Angelo was there, Bilal, Chris Rock was there, like Fred Armisen. It was like this weird Uber Hollywood-y type thing that I have not been invited to since, I'll be honest. But everybody, it was a Prince tribute. Everybody loves Prince. People are like fanatics, right? So everybody's doing basically like verbatim covers of these Prince songs. And I'm like, I didn't really like it. I didn't really want to do that, you know? So I ended up doing When Doves Cry, like in this kind of like Paranoid in this folk murder ballad style. And, you know, that was risky for me because everybody's like jamming up there, having a great night. And then I come out alone and do this kind of solo acoustic thing. And, you know, the Roots were the backing band for that night. And I said, no, I don't want to use you guys, which was a bold statement, bold thing to do.
Forget the Roots. What are they doing?
Once in a lifetime opportunity to play with them. And I turned it down so I could do this, my Bob Dylan routine. But I don't regret it. I think it was the right move. I think it was like a bold move. Like you guys are saying, like the covers album is kind of like this bold take on these songs. I guess maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, but that was an inspiration that night at in New York to kind of just do it in my way, because nobody really needs to hear a regurgitation of anything. If you've already heard that sound and whatever, like it's already been used, it needs to be something different. or nobody's going to want to hear what you have to say. So just put all your cards on the table, I guess.
I had heard that you had done a version of that, and I went looking for it to see if I could find a video for it or anything, and I couldn't, unfortunately.
No, there was really, really secure, cell phones and, baggies and whatever. It was weird. And Prince was really, tight about people doing covers of his stuff, so I don't know.
Is that why it's not on either one of the two Substitute Preacher albums?
I think I can get it done by next, by the next one. I did record a new one, so that's sitting around.
Not that I'm super anxious to hear it or anything, but you know.
But super anxious to hear it, you know.
Yeah, obviously.
You have anxiety, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Having a panic attack.
Yeah, if you could just do that for us, that would be great. Thank you.
Are you got a guitar handy right now, or?
While I breathe into this paper bag, for me. I do plan on releasing that. Maybe just as a one-off or something, so it can quickly be taken down by Prince's people.
Be sure to let us know before it goes down. We wouldn't want anybody to have a full-on panic attack going on here. But now, one of the things too that I love about you is the fact that you do have an enjoyment of the hard rock, heavy metal music genre, and then you're not like that at all.
No, I mean, I have some stuff to say about that a little bit. In that, the rock world isn't like my parents are South Asian. I'm from America, but I look South Asian. I'm look Indian, but my parents are Sri Lankan, so it's a different nation, but. Our people come from the same people, roughly. And there's not a lot of room for people who look like me in rock. And I wouldn't go so far as to say it's racist. I would just say it's not everybody's invited to the table, I guess you could say. And it's not just me. I think Latin artists as well. I come from an American-centric way of thinking, which is probably unusual for you Canadians to imagine that an American would only think of themselves. But
no comment.
Yeah. A giggle would suffice. But yeah, a lot of people are excluded. Like black artists are excluded. I'm a minority in the minority, but even the major minorities are not included. Or if they have one kind of, not, I won't say token, but if you have one artist who fits the bill, executives are like, we don't need another one of those. We can have as many white artists as you want. But anyway, I don't want to go super down a path there. But in rock, it's not really so open, honestly. In the past month was an Asian American Appreciation Month here. And a lot of people, 50%, 40% of people couldn't name a Asian American person, a famous one, I guess you could say. And that's fair, but it's also comes from the top. It's not just from the consumer doesn't have a taste for it or something. It's coming from the top. So it's a little funny, but in pop, the world is more open, I guess you could say, hip hop and stuff like that. So I kind of have gravitated a tiny bit that way. For better or for worse in the past, 5 years of my career. Not that my Substitute Preacher album kind of reflects that, but this is more of fun stuff that I think my friends would love. My friends who love Pink Floyd and rock music and stuff like that. And I think if you, as an artist, if you work that way, pleasing your friends and people that you respect their music opinion, you can have a broad appeal, I guess
you could say. You think as an artist someday you might just say, hell with it, I'm going to make a hard rock album, who cares what anybody thinks?
Well, I've done some hard rock songs. I'm a little old to be headbanging a little bit, so I'm not so inspired in that way anymore. I used to love Rage Against the Machine and heavy rock, and I knew all that stuff. But the angst is kind of faded away a little bit into more pleasing melodicism, I guess you could say. I don't know what I'm talking about. But Yeah, I'm not that guy exactly, but I can be that guy, I guess. But I don't. It just doesn't suit my personality all the time, I guess you could say. I was in a hard rock band for a long time, and first of all, it was very noisy, incredibly loud. And so, like, when I would do solo gigs with my acoustic guitar, it was just like a night and day thing where I'm in control of every aspect. It's more exhausting for sure to play solo because you're the drummer, the bassist, and the guitarist, and the singer, or whatever. You know, you're holding it all together. But it's freeing in a way. But being in a band is awesome at the same time. It's immense power. I've been thinking about like doing some work with some of my old bandmates who still play in bands around the Bay Area. I'm down in LA right now, but hopefully.
Now, you know, of course, you the last album, Peace of Mind, one of the things that I love about that is the fact that you also did the Peace of Mind podcast.
Mm-hmm. There is videos of you doing Hunger Strike with Chris Cornell.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, should we talk about the podcast?
Yeah, that's because, you know, to me, I found that really interesting and just, you know, a different way of looking at not only the music, but just even releasing something.
Yeah, it was an undertaking. It was cool. It was unlike anything I've ever done, for sure. Over my years, because I don't exactly fit in a mold of like rock musician guy. I do a number of different things. I do kind of literary events sometimes, random things, and meeting of the mind type of events. So I meet like scientists and I meet really interesting people. Sorry, I feel like it went dead. You guys still hear me?
Yep, totally still
okay,
hear you.
Okay, cool. Sorry. And so for the podcast, I was able to interview a lot of people about the state of affairs in America. And on my album, I had about 10 songs, I guess 11 songs, and each song was about kind of a different societal or political problem in our country, whether it's in America, whether that's voting suppression or just the chaos of whatever just happened in the past 5 years.
There was chaos. Yeah. What?
We're in the eye of the tornado now.
We totally didn't notice from up here.
I mean, you guys got what you got going on too. So
that's right.
And so the album would have been a cool concept album just by itself, but for each episode of the podcast, which we released with the song each week, I would interview social scientists or journalists or other musicians. But it really wasn't that many musicians. It was mostly almost like a news podcast with my music as the soundtrack. And at the end of every episode, I would explain how I wrote and created the song. And it was pretty awesome. And I hosted the podcast. I never hosted a podcast. That was a lot of work, as you guys know. So it was a new challenge and it's cool, but I definitely needed a break after it because it was like a scripted podcast, I guess that's what you call it, where you got to edit a ton before you go on. It's not like Dax Shepard's, you know, whatever, you know, sitting and chat with a cup of coffee. Exactly. Not that that's easy. I'm just saying like there's writing involved and stuff that I had to learn on the fly. We had Dave Eggers on. Great author, and it was eye-opening. I was always the dumbest guy in the room, which was fun and interesting, and I kind of played that up a little bit for the audience, which is always good. And a lot of people were really impressed by it, which was awesome because it was like it hadn't been done at that time, I don't think, in a music album being released as a podcast like that. And the way I did it, which was a mix of society and culture and news and music together, was pretty cool. And it was definitely a lofty goal. I think we we reached.
How important then is it to kind of keep that, you know, just talk about things like mental health and you know, society and pressure and just all that stuff to you?
It's important. It's what's crazy today is that everybody's talking all the time and like Twitter universe, and it's almost like the boy who cried wolf a little bit. It's like, I don't know what's important anymore a little bit when I just open my ears and listen to whatever everybody's talking about. So I'm very like aware of that, and I'm aware of how the consumer or whatever, you know, the public is hearing things and ingesting things. So I'm like concerned about the messaging and how you are communicating with people ultimately. In what way are you communicating with them? But yeah, it's definitely important. But like, you can't have like Kanye West being at the forefront of mental health discussions, because that's a bit too far, I think. I think it's like, but yeah, I don't know what it's like exactly in Canada. I know you guys have gotten, it's gotten a little different over there, but over in America, it's like, I don't even know where to begin, because we have so many things going on and so many forces pulling us in, I think, a wrong direction, almost an evil direction, I would say, some of the time, with the gun control and our drug problems and stuff like that, and taking care of our kids with mental health, like you said. It's like, we don't really care about that stuff over here. We don't have stuff in place for our citizens to thrive. It's not really about that here. And that shit is depressing to continually have to engage with, you know? Mm-hmm.
You think that's just because you have 9.5 times the population?
It's a massive population, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And like, you can't look to like the Netherlands or whatever, you know, like, oh, look at how they did that. And it's like, yeah, well, America is a beast out of control. It's a different thing. So yeah, I agree. It's a massive country. I don't know. I don't have the solution, but I think you can take care of your kids and schools, and make schools safe physically with the gun violence stuff, and mentally with depression and anxiety, I guess, or like expectations of kids and whatever is going on. But there's something more drastic going on now, I feel, than when I was a kid with kids.
It feels maybe like the building blocks are wrong. Like, we should be starting with the kids and the mental health, and then moving down the line towards lawyers, guns, and money.
I mean, some things fall into place, but there are people in charge that don't understand kind of how things logically fall into place, I guess. It's more of a, I don't know, I'm not smart enough to say, but it's more like you beat them instead of, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I don't know how to say it, but it's a negative reinforcement as opposed to positive reinforcement, mm-hmm. ultimately. In almost every aspect, you know, crime and stuff too. So I don't know what the question was. Like, can I solve America's problems in one day or something like that?
Yeah. Oh, damn. Well, we were hoping.
But there's a lot of beauty in the world. It's just that a lot of negativity is selling. So you gotta kind of like, you can't be on your phone all the time, I guess.
I was wondering like just about the difference, you know, like from going from St. Louis then to LA and the social problems and the difference between them.
Well, yeah. So you're in Canada, you're close, and you probably know what a Democrat and a Republican is. And
yep.
Growing up in St. Louis was, although obviously there is racial tension and stuff, it was like, I lived next to Republicans and people were cordial and stuff like that. And now I don't see that so much. Now, LA for sure is more liberal than the St. Louis I grew up in. It was reddish purple, I guess you could say, meaning kind of a mix. And we were very liberal, but we lived right next to very conservative, what I would call backwards people now, but they are not backwards. They're normal. And, but today all I see is the insanity and people following Donald Trump. And I can't get my head around it, so I just assume they're crazy, but they're not. they're not lunatic assholes people. They're just kind of in some station in life that makes sense to them. So, but yeah, I was pretty blissfully ignorant for the most part about that stuff as a kid, although not so blissfully ignorant. But in LA, it's so liberal here. It's like, it's almost like so far that my St. Louis head can't wrap my head around it. Like, it's, even though I'm very liberal, I'm like, oh, that's a little bit too far. Every once in a while here. But yeah, I mean, I live in a part of LA that's near Caltech. And so it's like kind of like this university feel in a way. I don't know. I guess I would say St. Louis, when I grew up, was just more chill. It wasn't so cutthroat about politics at all. Mm. So it didn't matter. It was like, oh, I voted for whoever, I don't know, Bush or whatever, in 92. But I don't tell anybody that I voted for Bush in 92. And we go about our business and everything's fine. And now it's different because everybody wants their opinion heard. So it's everything's super raw and nobody wants to hear it. But yeah, I mean, it's so drastically different. Even in St. Louis, I know what it's like in St. Louis, and it's drastically different. I think we all got hoodwinked pretty good over here. That's what I think. I think Russia knows more about Americans than Americans know about themselves, is what I think. And they got us pretty good.
No comment.
No comment. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry, guys. Yeah. You can cut this out. But no, that's where I stand.
Well, you know, we're Canada.
You got us, Russia. You got us. Our mouths were open. You got us.
You know, here in Canada, our most conservative party would be considered liberal by American standards.
Right.
So, you know,
I know.
Just a different point of view.
That's like what I think of the 80s was. It was like.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. Now we're running out of time, but okay. I want to ask you, like, after this album, like, when are you looking at recording just your next album? Like, are you working on that?
I am. I've been like, it's kind of like things on the burner, and the covers album came together a lot quicker. Just timelines of people's schedules and my schedule and where it was at. Obviously, it's a shorter project. It's like 5 songs or something, so it's easier to get off the plate. And I simultaneously was working on a lot of original stuff. And I almost have like 10 or 11 really good songs. I have probably like 25 ideas and 11 or so are viable. And I don't want to jump the gun, but I could be done working on it pretty soon. But sometimes releases take a long time. Depending on how you go about it. And I don't have any record deals in place or anything like that. So there's no timeline or pressure exactly, but I will shop it around once it's complete, for distribution and stuff like that. Yeah, I mean, music industry is so in constant flux as to how you should release and what you should do. I mean, plenty of people just release it on SoundCloud or release it immediately on Spotify and Apple. So there's multiple things I could do. Like, if I did that, I could probably have it by the end of the summer. And so I guess we'll just see.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited about it. I'm excited about it for sure.
Yeah, well, and that's as you should be. You know,
don't tell me to not be excited about it.
That's right.
I'm excited about it. I hope you are.
But yeah, it's different sounding influences and kind of production techniques, I guess you could say, but just a little bit more modern, I guess you could say, but not that modern. You know, it's just taking some modern influences and mixing it with what I do, not like rewriting what I do. Yeah, it's been cool. I mean, a lot of the songs I was writing, because I'm in LA, I write, and sometimes I have other people in mind. And there's a number of them that I had other people in mind, and I just, I'm like, I think they're really good, and I'd probably just as soon, unless Beyonce comes and wants it or something, but I'd rather just take it myself. So some of them came together that way. And that's cool, because it has a different sound to it sometimes if I'm writing without myself in mind.
Mm-hmm. Well, B, I know I've really appreciated talking to you, and we are certainly big fans of your music.
No, I'm just
kidding. No, totally. It's no comment from the peanut gallery. No. But we want to give you the chance to tell everybody how they can keep up with you and where they can find Substitute Preacher 2 and all those fantastic musical albums that you've done.
Oh, thanks. Thank you guys for having me, first of all. Hope weather is starting to... Spring has sprung everything up in Calgary.
Ooh, we are about 92, 93 degrees here right now.
Oh, okay.
Oh, and yeah, we're dying up here. We can't.
I'm
take
still
this
in
weather.
2020, guys. This isn't 2021 for me. So winter is still coming for you guys.
Yes.
But you can check me out at bbhiman.com. It's bhiman.com. And you can find almost everything about me there. Instagram, Twitter, Spotify, Apple Music, how to buy the album directly off of there, how to stream it. You can listen to the podcast, Peace of Mind, on whatever you do, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts. And yeah, I'll be having new releases coming soon, and check out Substitute Preacher 2. Best Friend's Girl is my favorite. A lot of people have said My Way is their favorite, which I get. It's very emotional. I really like it too. Yeah.
And, I love Best Friends Girl.
We're about to be kicked great. Out by Zoom here any
Less
second.
Than
now.
A minute. Oh.
So yeah. So thank you so much for your time, and hopefully we can talk to you again. I'd love to talk to you a little more about Chris Cornell. I'm gonna go watch the Hunger Strike. There's a few Amazing. Videos of you two performing together there. So
amazing, dude. I get more amazed by him every day.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, B, and you know, all the best in the future. Bye. Carpet right where